Well, Derek, I don't know if there's a more apropos way to start the podcast than to say, well, that happened.
It did.
Yeah.
I can confirm.
All of it happened here on a dark and stormy night, as the folks may hear in the background. It's we're not peeing ourselves over some trade Ron Francis may or may not have done.
Speak for yourself.
It's a little bit of a storm happening here in Raleigh.
It is, and the worldwide headquarters is apparently pretty close to where the gutter is on your house.
There you go. Also, not a lot of storm winds blowing in trade land today, as the trade deadline edition of Cheaters Never Win kind of kicks it off tonight. Derek, quick in-game update. How are the Hurricanes looking against Tampa?
We lost. I'm sorry. We want to do the in-game bit, but Mike, I have to stay true to the action itself. I'm not going to go back and be like, hey, you know, Hannifin scored, it's 1-1. Like, I'd love to be optimistic, but I can't lie to the people like that. They will know. They'll find a way to go back and do some kind of files and see that we recorded this after the game ended, and then somebody calls us out on our nonsense. And then, Mike, if we don't have our good reputation, what do we have?
Good grammar-ish?
Sometimes.
One of us. You know what we do have? Great guests.
We have two, count them, two great guests.
Yeah, on tonight's episode of Cheaters Never Win, we may actually refer to this as the Merrick versus Wyshynski trade deadline episode of Cheaters Never Win, because
this is not an Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. No, this is just a tribute.
we have none other than Game Show Friday legend Matt Riegler. Also, you know, we talk of him of that, but Matt's also a pretty accomplished writer. Has worked for NBC Sports, has done a lot of stuff for NBC Sports Network and their hockey coverage, and also is a great writer over at Roto World.
Yeah, there's a pretty good chance if you are a fantasy hockey player and you have read player updates, there's a pretty decent chance you've read Matt Riegler's work.
Yeah, he's good at what he does. And then a first time, long time here on the podcast, a guy who sometimes is a little quiet on Twitter, but every trade deadline, he comes back. And it was finally great to finally put a voice to the Twitter account that is at Ken Confirm.
That was a lot of fun. I don't know if I'd thought about it to now. Is he the Punxsutawney Phil of hockey Twitter?
In the fact that he may come back every episode from here on out?
Sure, why not?
Those two guys were here. They were phenomenal. We're going to talk a little bit about trade deadline. We're going to talk about the Florida two-game back-to-back swing.
Do we have to?
We might. We're going to talk about the games coming up this weekend. We're going to take you, our loyal fans, and your cheat mail questions. We'll answer those to the best of our ability. We've got a fine member of the local media here, and we asked him if he wanted to join us, but he's too busy on Twitter, basically sticking up for Cam Ward and complaining why he wasn't in the game tonight.
I like it.
So we're not going to let him talk on the podcast because, you know what, F local media. We're coming to you straight from Obama's basement. This is the Section 328 Worldwide Headquarters, where we like to drink beer and play video games. And Derek, I like it when you hit that X button.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Cheaters Never Win podcast, another fine product of Section328.com. Here you'll find all the Hurricanes hockey talk, adult beverage reviews, and snark a growing body needs. Follow us on Twitter at Section_328. Respect the underscore. And now back to Derek and Mike.
We are back, and thank you guys for joining us here on the trade deadline edition of Not Another Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast.
That is what we're calling this one. But Mike, before we go on, we mentioned Merrick versus Wyshynski, and we have two people well known from that program and the Twitter fan base that has been built into that. But before we go forward, I need to look back a little bit because, okay, for one reason, my voice has just now recovered in the last day and a half or so from the Friday game against the Ottawa Senators. It was Hockey's for Everyone night, and Hockey's for Everyone also included fans of the local football or soccer team, the Oak City Supporters, who came and joined us and made all the sweet, beautiful noise in Section 328 all game long.
Yeah, those, I thought I was a leather lung, and I've been known to be leather lung-ish, but those guys are pros.
they know what they're doing. They came prepared with songs. We tailgated with them before the game, and we're like, hey, just so we can get the feel of things and we can join in, like, what are some of your songs, your chants? What should we know? And they said, well, most of ours include the F word. We said, okay, well, those have to go because we have somewhat of a reputation to uphold. But they were kind enough to edit most of their tunes and make them radio-friendly. And we had a really good time. Lindholm's brother, I think, may have had a better time than we did.
Oliver Lindholm was a party effing machine. Oh, no, party effing animal.
Yes.
And you knew it because it said it on his t-shirt.
It was a bold choice, but
it was.
We had a fantastic time. You and I even left our seats on Row C to join the Oak City supporters for the third period in all of their merriment, bellowing down chants and tunes and just general fun yelling for the duration of the third period. It was that coupled with the 3-0 win and the fun of everybody wearing their You Can Play Hockey's for Everyone shirts.
Eddie Lack shutout.
Eddie Lack shutout was one of the better times I've had at a Canes game in a long, long time. I'm not saying I want to keep up that level of yelling and singing every game, but a few times, it's a hell of a lot of fun.
I think it proved to us that not only can we in Section 328 severely up our game, and I'm going to learn from these young gents. I'm going to attend some soccer matches with them this summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like for example, the song, one of the songs they brought to us, "Come on, game, come on, Canes, let's score a goal. It's really freaking simple. Put the puck into the net, and we'll go freaking mental." La 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 la. That won't be the last time that that's actually uttered in our section
at all.
Yeah. So, thanks to the guys at the Oak City supporters, they are at
guys and gals
and gals. Thank you. They are OCS Raleigh, I believe,
something like that. We retweeted
at OCS Raleigh. Follow them. They have their own section out at the soccer park where they're allowed to bring in signs and fatheads and smoke bombs and flares.
I think RPGs are allowed on Saturdays.
Yeah. No, I mean, the fact that they said, no, legitimately, we're allowed to bring flares into the game. I was like, strong work, Cotton.
Yeah.
Bold choice.
They're not going to have that kind of criteria allowed in like the Sand Hills or Wayne County.
Yeah.
No, those aren't happening there.
But yeah, no, it was an absolute blast to have those guys in the stands with us. And again, they are welcome anytime with us. They brought a fire and a passion to the arena that honestly hadn't been seen for a while, and a passion that hasn't been seen during the 2-game road trip. Derek,
ooh, smooth transition, Mike.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. It's gonna be tough on a road trip to play without your best goal scorer. I would say at this point, tied for our most dangerous offensive player in Jeff Skinner, who came back just hours before the game yesterday, by the time people listened to this several days ago, with an upper body concern. And I know we were concerned that, Skinner, upper body, you immediately think concussion. Thankfully, Ron Francis set those concerns aside by saying it was a stiff neck. I don't know how much I want to buy into that completely, but I think it's reassuring that they're saying, okay, yeah, he'll be back in the lineup.
Yeah, we expect to see Jeffrey back in the lineup this week. But, and again, it was the timing was peculiar, not only because he took a puck to the elbow to the head in the Calgary game, but also the fact that it was the day before the trade deadline, I think, made us all have a certain lower body extremity pucker a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough. And then Brock McGinn was touch and go, came back and got hurt very early on in the Florida game. So not only did you have Matt Tennyson already playing as the 12th forward, then you lose Brock McGinn and Jay McClement has to slide up to ye first line of Jordan Stahl, Jay McClement, and warm body. And woof. But you know what? The Canes, I think they showed a lot of heart in that Florida game. To go down 2-0, that could have easily been a game that turned into 4 or 5-0.
Not only that, but the way they played that first period, I think they ended with two, possibly three shots on goal in the first.
Yeah.
It was a woeful first period. So yeah, you're exactly right, but just wanted to add a little bit more color.
Yeah, they came back with a vengeance. It was good to see that the team was, you know, obviously rallying around each other, standing up for each other. And again, the game in Tampa tonight was disappointing to give up two third period goals. But again, to have Jay McClement out of nowhere with the shorty come back, tie it up, and gosh, I mean, when it's going to 3-on-3 overtime and they've got Victor Hedman in the triplets, it's kind of a loss, right? I mean, immediately you're like, either we're going to lose something silly or it's going to go to a shootout, and then there's no way we're stopping those guys.
Every time I watch Victor Hedman play hockey, I am constantly amazed at how fleet of foot he is. I mean, for a guy who's, what, 6'7", something like that, he moves so well, quick, smooth, and he's got a hell of a shot. It's not just a heavy slap shot from the point. He has a really nice wrist shot.
He's also got a heavy slap shot from about 8 feet.
Well, yeah, the Yoni Pitkin Memorial slap shot from the top of the crease.
You think about it, that he is very much a Yoni Pitkin type player. He's a big guy who is beyond his size, agile and quick. It never looks like he's skating too hard, but the team is so much better when he's playing well.
I can see that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you just turned Yoni Pitkinen all the way up.
Turn Yoni Pitkinen up to 11.
Yes, then you have Victor Hedman, but I would say Victor has a much better beard than Yoni ever could.
Yes.
That was a very blonde man.
Yeah. Not a lot of melanin.
No, very, very little. Not a lot of time outdoors spent in his family heritage. Tonight's game, like you said, it wasn't all that bad. Noah Hanifin scored a goal, which was very nice. He also had a primary assist on Derek Ryan's goal. We lost the lead kind of on a fluky goal off Tyler Johnson's. I don't know if it was his shin pad or his boot or whatever the hell it was. And Eddie Lack was at times very good and at times questionable. The one thing I would like to say about Eddie Lack, we saw it on Friday, we saw it again tonight. He mentioned that he is focusing more on having fun and not so much on the mechanics of playing goal. And what I hear when I heard that, coupled with what I've seen on the ice, is he's telling David Marcoux, yeah, cool, coach me all you want. I ain't listening anymore, and I'm going to play goal the way I think it should be played. Tonight, he allowed 4 goals. Friday night, he allowed 0 goals. But what we're seeing out of Eddie is he is playing deeper in the crease where he is far more comfortable, especially as a taller goalie, and letting shots come to him versus playing at the top of the crease and getting beaten. Sure, he probably should have come out a little bit on Hedman's last goal, but also would have helped if Jordan Staal were faster.
Right. So I think 2 games in Florida, 2 points out of them. Do points even really matter at this point? Yeah, the gentleman, the tall gentleman with his hand raised?
Yeah, no.
Okay, so points no longer matter for this Carolina Hurricanes team. Not just because we've been sellers of the trade deadline, just because there are too many people and too many teams
Maths.
Between we and them to possibly catch up, plus the March schedule, I believe, is murder.
I think we have 24 games in 22 days.
Something like that.
I think that's right.
I believe
I may not have carried the ones quite right.
I believe we played Detroit twice in the same day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
a doubleheader.
Yeah, it's doubleheader. But
Cam Moore starting both games.
Of course. Got a shutout in the first game. So, Derek, do we want to talk about the trade deadline? Ron Francis did a great job, right? You know, he didn't have a lot of stuff to deal, didn't have a lot of expiring contracts.
Mm-hmm.
We knew we needed to get value for some guys. We got value, more value than we probably should have out of Ron Hainsey. And
the
then
the Stahlberg deer is deer. Deer?
Deer?
We didn't get a deer for Victor Stahlberg. It'd be kind of weird if we did.
Some nice venison jerky. Mm-hmm.
The deal for Victor Stahlberg, getting a 3rd-round pick back. Like, yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, P.A. Parento got a conditional 6th-round pick.
Thomas Vanek got a 3rd-round pick and something called Dylan McElrath, who already went through waivers this year.
Twice. Dylan McElrath was a former 1st-round pick of the New York Rangers.
Lottery pick.
He's slow.
Mm-hmm.
He's
But he's got heavy fists.
Yeah, well, he's basically had to form himself into a fighter because that's the only way he's ever going to catch anybody is if he grabs them and punches them.
He's like a kid who grew up saying, God, I want to be Darian Hatcher, and then the game changed, but it was too late for him.
poor Dylan McArath. Okay. Ron Francis did a good job. I mean, yeah. We're going to debate with these next two fellas on whether Ron Francis should have done stuff differently. And we could talk about what we're going to talk about, but why don't we let them talk about it? And guys, I don't know if I could be any more excited. Derek, as we've told the folks on this podcast many a time, we started this whole thing many years ago when Jeff Merrick told us, if you love something, set it free. If you love it even more, record a podcast.
I don't think that makes sense, but I'm along for the ride.
We learned this, obviously, because we have been for years avid listeners of Greg Wyshynski's and Jeff Merrick's podcast that used to be daily, but they no longer give a flying flip about us, and I guess Jeff Merrick is working 27 or 28 jobs, and they record weekly now, but we have two gentlemen who have been so ingrained not only in the fabric of Merrick versus Wyshynski, but have become ingrained in our life, not only in Twitter, but in real life. And I could not be more excited to welcome to this, the trade deadline edition of the Cheaters Never Win podcast, Game Show Friday legend, Matt Riegler.
And we do have a second guest that I can confirm, none other than Ken confirm. Gentlemen, welcome to the Cheaters Never Win podcast. How are the two of you today?
I can confirm that I'm great, and I also can confirm that you guys have been my biggest supporters since becoming a hockey reporter on Twitter for Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Well, that is good to hear. And Matt, I appreciate your sideshow Bob laugh as an introduction. I hope you're doing well up in the great state of New York.
My only regret in life is that you guys weren't around for my bar mitzvah so that I could give you enough cannon fodder which to torture me for the rest of my life.
Oh, well, that should be plenty easy for the next 15, 20 minutes of this interview, Matt. So let's get to it. Today was trade deadline day, and it was so bad on TSN Trade Center that basically TSN was debating which guys would be on the A team and the B team of Team Canada, and it was really awful. Most of the big moves were made prior to today, but Matt, we'll start with you. Why don't you give us your initial reaction to what did, and maybe more importantly, what didn't happen on this, the 2017 trade deadline?
I thought what was really interesting about what happened is that there were only about two genuinely pragmatic teams that are going to make the playoffs this year. They're going to try and make the playoffs this year because they're not currently in a slot. The Kings going and get Bishop and the Panthers going and get Vanek. It's very simple. They went and they addressed a need at a price that they can afford. They traded from a position of strength and went and added to the depth of their roster. I think that the Kings going and getting Bishop, and I know they got a Ginla, but he's ancient. But Jonathan Quick, whatever you think he is buoyed much better by Ben Bishop than he is by Peter Budaj. And whatever you think of Thomas Vanek, he's not going to Florida to go be a first line player. He's going to be a middle six player, which is what he is right now. And he's doing quite well in that role at this stage of his career. And I think that those are really the kind of trades that you want to see teams making. What I also think you want to see teams doing is something that I'm sure we'll get to, is what Carolina didn't do, and augmenting the roster from a position of strength to address a position of need, which is their position of strength in defense and the position of need in offense. And I think it's very interesting that we still see so much conservatism in trying to augment one's team in the face of all of the analytics that we have today, that which we, a front office, can use to make smarter decisions with. In a nutshell, that's what I thought we saw.
Well, I thought it was interesting that the first thing you mentioned today, or for a trade deadline deal, was a trade that actually happened a few days ago, which was the Ben Bishop deal. And Ken, I'd like to get your thoughts on this as a guy who, can let us know the official optics on something.
I can confirm that Ben Bishop was traded to the Kings the other day.
Hey, all right. Look, now we know it's official. So, one of the things
I know everyone's been wondering.
one of the things that, you know, some friends and I have talked about today is when it's so slow, like, do you consider deals that are made in the few days leading up to the deadline to be deadline deals? Or are we so focused on this one day because TSN and Sportsnet and everybody else, you know, has wall-to-wall coverage of it? So what's the better way to look at trade deadline? Was this a bust because the actual day was slow? Or was trade deadline 2017 kind of exciting because you had the Bishop deal and some other things that happened in the days prior?
Well, I can confirm that I would prefer all the trades to be made today. I am part of the problem in that I tend to report more today than other days. I think that we in the media should open up more and can cover more, maybe cover not as wall to wall today and have it be more of a week of thing. I mean, you see guys like Shattenkirk being moved the other day. If that had happened today, you know, everyone would have had it. Would have been, it was a big deal then. Imagine what a big deal it would have been if it had happened at 2:55 today and I had been able to confirm that today. So I think that you know, that kind of takes some of the wind out of it. But, you know, you can't force GMs to make moves on the deadline day itself if they can get things done earlier. So I think the 2 to 3 to 4 days leading up to the deadline should be considered kind of deadline deals. But at the same time, I recognize that I and you know, TSN and Sportsnet are part of the issue with why that's not the case.
Well, guys, let's get a little bit closer to home and let's talk a little bit about what Fort Knox Francis was able to do this trade deadline. Unfortunately, we were not in a position to be buyers as much as 6 weeks ago. We had hoped to land one of the golden gooses that Joe Sakic wanted
I believe the word is geese.
Golden gooses.
Okay.
That Joe Sakic was trying to peddle around the league, neither of which who moved.
Derek, it's not geese, it's moose or mooses. It's not meese.
Are we taking the Maple Leafs approach to pluralizing things in the NHL now?
Yeah.
No, I'm defending my friend.
Oh.
Stop attacking him.
Thank you, Matt.
Whoa, have you listened to the show, sir? It's all I do.
Thank you, Matt. That's why you're a legend. So let's talk a little bit about Ron Francis and the fact he was able to get, I think, perceived really good value out of a guy like, you know, you get a third round pick out of Victor Stahlberg and guys like P.A. Parento are only bringing back sixth round picks. And getting a second round pick for NHL's most played without a game in the playoffs, Ron Hainsey. So there was some movement in Kaniac land, but Matt, you had said a little bit earlier you were a bit disappointed in the moves Ron Francis not only made here at the trade deadline, but potentially in the 20 weeks leading up to the trade deadline. Who the hell do you think you are, Matt Riegler?
Just the guy looking back at me in the mirror. I don't know.
Well, okay. As Roto World professional writer and hockey expert Matt Riegler, give us your take and maybe even a grade on how Ron Francis has done with the Hurricanes this season. How about those apples?
Mmm, delicious. So I think that the trades that he did make were fantastic. The value that he was able to extract for Hainsey and Stahlberg in particular were fantastic. That's exactly what you want to do with people who are at the back end of your roster that still have value to other teams. And I don't mean this as a slight, but are replaceable. What I'm disappointed in is that he wasn't able to land at least one of the big guys over in Colorado. My preference would be Matt Duchene. And in general, I just think he's a better player. Without getting too deep into the weeds.
Better than who? Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews?
Two guys that aren't on Colorado? No.
You said he was a better player. I was just trying to confirm better than whom. Can you confirm?
We can confirm that Matt Duchene is better than Gabriel Landeskog. I can confirm that,
yes.
Right. So, all right. But just to refocus and answer your question is that the Carolina Hurricanes have a depth on the blue line. They have a depth on the blue line in current actualized talent that is signed to a team-friendly contract in Justin Falk. And they also have a lot of depth down in Charlotte, for example, Roland McEwen. I personally don't care who it is that you're trading in order to acquire Matt Duchene, and how the rest of the deal is extrapolated. Because what the Carolina Hurricanes would be doing is simply trading from a point of depth to address a point of need. And it's not that the Skinner and Staal and the like are bad offensive players. It's more that it's more important to have a better offense than it is to have a great defense in hockey. Duchene augments the offense in a way that Falk cannot augment the defense. And that is the kind of aggressive and pragmatic maneuver that leads to more victories, especially, and I know I'm being redundant, when you have a strength on the blue line and not as much of a strength up front.
No,
it kind of is that simple. You have to go out and find a way to make your team better. That is his only job. And if he has to sacrifice a little bit of long-term health to the club and Roland McEwen and another prospect in order to bring in Duchene, that's fine, because what the Carolina Hurricanes need to do is start making the playoffs. And since they already have guys like Teravainen and Aho and a couple other guys who are young on early contracts and are ready to go, you can sacrifice a little bit of unactualized talent to bring in somebody of Duchene's caliber, and that will make immediate dividends.
So, I think you have a lot of some good points there, and I'd open this up to either one of you. At what point in this season, though, does it benefit the Hurricanes to make a move like that, and does it benefit Colorado to make a move where you're just building for the future so much versus both teams who, I think at least a few weeks ago, had a pretty reasonable understanding, Colorado, you could say it in November, that they weren't going to make the playoffs. So why make that move during the season versus make the move at the draft or after you figure out who's going to Vegas? Like, where is the impetus on Colorado if, you know, if only not to just drive the price up for other teams based on bidding?
If I may, I'd like to take that first.
Yes, sir.
Well, I didn't want to cut off Ken if you really wanted to get in there.
No, I've got some things to say, but please.
Oh, well, thank you. All right. So I think that that's a false paradigm. I think that the idea of waiting and trying to drive up price by creating some sort of bidding war or by opening up the salary cap in the offseason is a completely false paradigm. What matters is the current opportunity that you have right now. And the opportunity that both teams have right now is to go get assets that will make their teams demonstrably better. Colorado is unfortunately not dealing from a position of strength, but that's not going to change until they start winning games or somehow they fleece on another team on a couple of deals. One is probably not going to happen, and the other one isn't going to change anytime soon. So Colorado waiting is hoping for a miracle. By teams like Carolina, well, I guess I shouldn't be so accusatory. I don't know what Sakic and Francis have done on their own time, right? But by not going and seizing the opportunity to go acquire a guy like Duchene, and even Landeskog if you have to, at the current time, at this stage in their career, with the assets that you currently have, do it early, because that means you get more term on their contracts. And that means you get a longer amount of time to assess whether or not you did or did not make the right move. You probably will have made the right move. And we see this in other sports, in particular in baseball, over the last 15 years, has absolutely embraced the notion that if a guy has a multi-year contract, it does not behoove the seller or the buyer to wait until the final trade deadline to get or move that player. If anything, the season beforehand, they're more valuable because that allows the acquiring team more time to make the secondary adjustment that they need to, either to keep building on the acquired asset or to move the incoming player in this example, if need be. That always pays off.
So basically you're saying Steve Yzerman made the greatest move of the day.
I mean, doesn't that go without question?
I mean, potentially. If there were only someone who could confirm that for us.
I can confirm
well,
that
that's
I love
that's
the move Steve Yzerman made today for a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, because, I think just first of all, getting that salary off the books, but second of all, they've got all of these guys who are going to be free agents soon, not only freeing up the salary cap space for them, but getting rid of what would have been a headache in terms of protection for the expansion draft, and passing that on to the Flyers, who now have to deal with that. And so in that sense, I think that Yzerman made a couple of great moves. And let's not forget laundering, you know, a player, you know, laundering Streit for the Penguins, because the Flyers were not going to trade him directly there. So basically flipping him and you know, being the middleman there. I think he had a great day. But back to the whole now versus the offseason, I agree with a lot of that, in the sense that I've never understood, and I saw some arguments about this on Twitter earlier today, I've never understood the argument that a guy is going to be more valuable in the offseason than he is now. I understand that, I get the fact that there may be more teams interested, and so you think you can drive up the price, but you're getting fewer games out of whoever you trade for. And if you can get half a season, or I guess not half a season, but you know, the last stretch of the season with a guy who you think is of value to your team, then I think you make that move earlier, and I think that you should be able to get more at that point. And that, with the caveat, that's especially true if you're trading to a team that is really trying to make a deep playoff run and so wants the guy for that, rather than teams like Colorado or the Hurricanes, who, you know, even if they turn it on at the end of the season and make the playoffs, aren't really expecting to make deep runs. But the other thing that that gives you, that end of the season, is you can see if they fit into your system. You can, and not only see if they fit into your system, but they can learn the system, which then gives them an advantage going into the next season. Because if you trade for them in the off season, then they come into training camp, have to learn the new system. And then when they get on the ice against other teams, and not just in practice and not just in preseason games, there is a learning curve, whereas there is a inherent advantage to having that learning curve take place during the regular season this year, so that when you come into next year, they know their teammates, they're ingrained in the locker room, and you don't have to go through that adjustment period and learning curve, and you can just hit the ice ready to go.
I think we refer to that down here as the parable of Eddie Lack. But Ken, many folks may not know that aside from being a top-notch Twitter confirmation reporter, you're also a bit of a CBA expert. And I'd love to get your take as we all turn away from the trade deadline today and we begin to look at the expansion draft that's coming up. What does we were all expecting Vegas and that team to become part of the league April 1st, and it was announced today that officially the Las Vegas Golden Knights are part of the league effective today. And I read all of this mumbo jumbo about, you know, what deals can be made and what can't, and trades that can be made, but the player season has to be done, yada yada yada. Can you, as a you know, our CBA expert, help the folks understand what the addition of Las Vegas to the NHL means today, and maybe what are some of the first moves we see coming out of the Golden Knights franchise?
Sure. And I have to preface this by saying that I am still reading and learning about what's going on with Vegas. This is something that has not happened while, you know, as long as I've been really, understood the CBA at all. So my understanding is generally what we're going to see, at least until the season ends, even though they are official members of the league, is not a lot. While they technically can make moves and they can make waiver claims, and I believe they fall between the either second and third or third and fourth last place teams in the league for waiver claims. I can't remember exactly where they slotted them in. They can't make any moves involving players in the NHL or AHL whose seasons haven't ended yet. So what can they do? Well, they can trade draft picks. They can sign or trade. Well, I guess you can't trade, but they can sign college free agents. And then this is what I'm still struggling to understand, but I'm trying to get a better grip on. I believe that they can agree, not officially make, but agree to make moves with NHL and AHL players with teams. So in other words, the Carolina Hurricanes could go to Vegas and say, propose a trade, agree on that trade, and then not announce it to the end of the year. But they do have to inform the league office. And then I guess actually they could announce it if they want, which then, you know, you can kind of, as Puck Daddy said earlier today, you wait and see how long they can keep something like that secret, because if it, you know, if a player is playing on a team and it gets out that he is going to be traded to Vegas, what effect does that have on the player, on the locker room, et cetera? So officially, too long, didn't read. They can't do anything with players in the NHL or the AHL officially until the offseason.
So basically what I'm hearing is George McPhee's first move is going to be a long-distance call to the KHL to sign Alexander Semin.
Exactly. One of his favorites from when he was the general manager of the Washington Capitals.
Those two are tight.
Yes. I think the first move we will see George McPhee make will be hiring a coach, to happen in the next week. But I will be curious to see if they make, you know, if they sign any college guys or if they move any draft picks. I don't really know how you would move draft. You wouldn't really move, you know, maybe two for one draft pick trades, you know. But it'll be interesting to see. And, you know, and one of the things that interested me today, and we heard early on today that Marc-Andre Fleury was not going to be moved. And so with the Penguins still having Fleury and Matt Murray, that will be something interesting to watch with the expansion draft and with Vegas, because you have to think that they're going to have their eyes on one of those goalies.
Well, we've got a couple of goalies down here in Carolina that they can get, but we'll leave that there. And I know this interview's run a little bit long, and guys, again, thank you both, Matt and Ken, for your time. But having both of you on here, I don't think we would be doing ourselves personally or our listeners any favors if we didn't offer out a bit of a test. Derek, what do you think about, you know, Ken confirm, he has long been the unknown voice of confirmations on Twitter. We believe that there is a real person behind Ken confirm, because the voice here sounds real and non-robotic.
I cannot confirm that.
Ooh.
We also have Game Show Friday legend Matt Riegler on.
I see where you're going, but I do have an issue. It's Wednesday.
It's Game Show Friday.
Oh, okay.
Legend Matt Riegler. So I'm
Does that
thinking,
mean I don't have to go to work tomorrow?
No, take tomorrow off. You're fine.
We'll vouch for you.
The boss we said it was okay.
I'm thinking, to do a podcast, I can't show up.
I'm thinking we have a luchador loses his mask Game Show Friday head-to-head Hurricanes trivia match between MVSW legends Ken Confirm and Game Show Friday legend Matt Riegler.
My one hesitation is, what does Matt Riegler have on the line, though?
That was going to be my question as well.
I believe what Matt Riegler... Many people may not know this about Matt Riegler, why he is... A fine, upstanding young man, but B, a professional writer at Roto World. C, he is a bit of a wiffle ball aficionado. I believe we could put up, I don't know, maybe changing Matt's logo on his team wiffle ball page to Ken Confirm. What do you think about that?
I like that.
All right.
McWiffleball?
I was just gonna say tried, but you know, then you made it real.
So it's real. This is happening. Okay, so Derek, I think the way we're gonna do this is Derek and I are gonna offer questions. We're not gonna have you buzz in, and we'll go back and forth. It'll be kind of an A B. We'll give each one of you a chance to answer. If you miss, the other person gets a chance to steal. I believe it is the first person. Should we say the first person to three?
Sure, that sounds good.
First person to three. I'm going to flip a coin here. And as the first-time participant can confirm, and the person who would have to give up his real identity, I'll allow you to call it in the air. Are you ready? Flip.
Yes. Tails.
It is tails.
Hey, all right.
There you go. So, Derek, first question for Ken confirm in the Lucha match.
All right. First question that I've just now come up with. The year was 2002. Carolina was playing in Toronto for a chance to go to the Stanley Cup final. A Carolina Hurricane scored the game-winning goal, announced by Steve Levy on ESPN when they showed hockey. Who was that player that sent the Carolina Hurricanes to the Stanley Cup final?
I can honestly say I can confirm. I have no idea, so I'm just going to take a wild guess at it, and I will say Rod Brind'Amour.
That is incorrect. Matt Riegler for the steal.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, stumped both.
I was going to say Brind'Amour as well. And, you know, Corey Stillman wasn't there yet. So I'm going to go with Jeff O'Neill.
Incorrect. The answer was Martin Jelena.
Or as, Martin Galinas.
I tried to go not that far off the board with that one, but I realize I am a Hurricanes fan. And, you know, probably didn't get the best ratings nationally.
Yeah. Question number two, Game Show Friday legend Matt Riegler. This one goes to you first. Ron Hainsey currently holds the National Hockey League record for most games played without ever having played in a playoff game. The Carolina Hurricanes also have a player who holds the record for player who played in the National Hockey League and played the most games without ever scoring a single goal. Who is that player?
Without scoring a single goal? And he's a current Hurricane?
He is a retired Hurricane. I'll give you a hint. Oh. He previously sold real estate in Raleigh.
Why would that help me? I'm in Brooklyn.
3 seconds.
Bruno Saint-Jacques.
No, Bruno Saint-Jacques is incorrect. Bruno Saint-Jacques scored plenty of goals for the Chicago Blackhawks. We will go to Ken Confirm. Can you confirm that you do or do not know this answer?
I can confirm that I do not know this answer, but I will think about it. And so they never scored, or they just went the longest before they scored their first goal?
They retired with zero goals scored in the National Hockey League.
Oh, there's no chance I'm going to know this then. Retired with zero National Hockey League goals. He hasn't retired yet, but I'll say Cam Ward.
Cam Ward has scored a goal.
I believe he does have one goal.
Yeah, he has one goal, which is one more than Steve Halko has.
He did score a goal.
Steve Halko was the correct answer. Steve Halko. Derek,
I think we may have gone too far back in the way back machine. So, I just unplugged my headphones.
So as we have some technical difficulties here, I think we're going to have to go to something maybe a little bit more modern, Derek.
Yeah, something much more modern. Here we go. The last time the Carolina Hurricanes were in the playoffs, they played against the Boston Bruins in a contentious playoff series. Scott Walker of the Carolina Hurricanes, depending on your perspective, sucker punched or deservedly punched one player from the Boston Bruins. Name the player, name the Bruins player that got wrecked. And Ken, you are up first.
I can confirm that I don't know this off for sure, but
would you like to call a lifeline, get a hint, get a 50-50?
I mean, if you're willing to give me a hint, I had a guess that I thought was a pretty educated one, but okay.
You want to take your lifeline or if you want to go with your guess, we'll allow you either.
Well, I'm going to save my lifeline.
Okay.
Was it Sean Thornton?
Ooh, that is incorrect.
That is incorrect. Matt Riegler for the steal.
Carolina Hurricane, great. No, legend. Aaron Ward.
That is correct.
Matt Riegler with the 1-0 lead.
Game Show Friday legend, Matt Riegler.
And Matt goes first with a chance to go up 2 Cobb.
Yeah. This one's going to be tough. To come up with? No. I'm sitting here thinking we could go really a couple of different ways with this. Could we? Matt Riegler.
Corey Stillman.
I was actually going to ask which Carolina Hurricanes player has done less than any other Hurricanes player ever, and then you would have said Steve Halko, and I would have said no. The correct answer is Corey Stillman, because he does nothing.
No, Rowden Verbata and Elias Lindholm. Those are the two players you hate so much.
Nah, we don't hate Elias Lindholm all of the time. He's actually a very good first assist guy. Game show legend Friday, Matt Riegler. Question number four to go up 2-0. Who's my favorite hockey player of all time?
Like, what day of the week is it?
There is a correct answer, by the way.
Well, you know, I think lately you've been on the Aho train. So I'm going to go with Sebastian Aho, and rightfully so.
That's a fine answer, but I will speak on Mike's behalf. That is absolutely incorrect. Ken, you have the chance to steal the point.
Ken, this would be a good time to call in a lifeline.
Yeah, I'll use my lifeline.
Ken, we're going to your lifeline is, we're going to say that my favorite hockey player is a current National Hockey League general manager who Matt Riegler wishes had made a deal with Ron Francis today.
Oh, that's a pretty good hint. So would that be Joe Sakic?
That would be none other than wrist shot Jesus himself, Joe Sakic. Congratulations, it's tied up 1-1.
Today I learned Mike's hints are spoon feeding.
What, is that Jorge Alves?
Oh, God.
I got that hint because I was going to guess Rod Brind'Amour again.
Just keep guessing Rod Brind'Amour until it's right. Derek,
wasn't there a guy on MVSW who kept saying, like, Jason Blake for like five straight questions?
Yes,
I think so. So I'm gonna go in the category of goalies.
Hey, look, it's a Carolina Hurricanes podcast. The Carolina Hurricanes have won Stanley Cup. Rod Brind'Amour was on that team.
It's a fair guess.
Like, you're perfectly logical. We can confirm you are a soundly reasoned man.
I will go with goalies that have been around the world as your category here, and I believe Ken is up first. Ken, name the former Carolina Hurricanes goalie that was once too drunk for the KHL, and we are convinced is the only professional goalie who could outdrink Ed Belfour.
Ooh. I feel like I should know this, and I'm really upset at myself for not having anything pop into my mind. Former Carolina Hurricanes goalie who is very good at drinking.
Also played in the KHL.
Wait, what did you say?
And also played in the KHL.
Right, well, that's the problem, is that I'm trying to remember, if I can even come up with a Hurricanes goalie who played in the KHL. And I can't come up with one for sure, so I'm just going to go with a goalie that I know played for the Carolina Hurricanes in a past life. And so I will say, I don't even know if he played in the KHL, Anton Khudobin.
Ooh, that is not the correct answer.
Matt Riegler for the steal. And you could also call on a lifeline should you so choose.
I mean, yeah, I want to win. So
okay, all right.
Lifeline?
So your lifeline is, this man not only makes a great crust on cheesecake, he also has the most sexist goalie helmet in NHL history.
I think we pay attention to very different things.
He makes a great crust for cheesecake.
Yeah, we pay attention to very different things. Look, I'm not really sure, but I do think I know one man.
Oh, I think I know
played
now.
For both the KHL and the Carolina Hurricanes. And I think the answer is Kevin Weeks.
Ooh, that is also incorrect. I will go back to Ken Confirm, as he believes he has the answer. And by God, we are really whiffing on these questions. So, Ken, do you think you know who it is?
Is it John Graham?
It is John Graham.
It is John Graham. John Graham, he who had the buxom, barely there bikini NASCAR lady on his helmet.
Two different iterations of that.
Yes, and also too drunk to play in the KHL.
I can confirm that I had no idea that he played in the KHL until right now.
Nah, he probably doesn't either.
So this...
Wait, I just want to point out that you told him his first answer, and I had to decode mine.
Okay, so what other things can you make? It is a graham cracker crust. Jesus, Game Show Friday legend Matt Riegler. Is there anyone here who confirm Matt Riegler is going to be a baby when he loses?
Okay. I can confirm that.
Okay. So question number three for the win. Finally, I see why Merrick wanted to kill this bit. This is hard.
We should have prepped.
Question number three. Ron Francis traded whom for Eddie Lack? Actually, that's a bad question. Because that was draft picks, wasn't it? Yeah, we traded draft picks for Eddie Lack. I don't even know the answer to that. So let's take this in today's Game Show Friday.
It was a third and a fifth for Eddie.
Yeah, so
that's a bad question, Mike.
It was a horrible question. My apologies to our listeners for having to endure me every week for the last four seasons. It is our belief that Rod Brind'Amour is the greatest Carolina Hurricane player of all time. And on an annual basis, we at Section 328 name the top Carolina Hurricanes players of all times. Name four of the top 10 Carolina Hurricanes players as rated by definitive Carolina Hurricanes website, section328.com, can confirm. You can't use Rod Brind'Amour because we gave you that one, and then Matt would complain.
I believe Matt is up first, actually.
Oh, is Matt up first?
I was gonna do the honorable thing and say that yes, he is.
Matt, four. Give us four of the Hurricanes' top 10 of all time players, and this is for double points and the win.
Why not?
Eric Staal, Kevin Dineen, Pat Verbeek, and
okay. Let's Pat Verbeek never wore the sightless eye. So let us help you out here. The rule for the Section 328 is that this player had to have played for the Carolina Hurricanes, wore the sightless eye, and you can only consider the time and the games he played while wearing the sightless eye. What he may have done for another hockey club or for a certain team in Hartford does not count towards our final rankings. And we will allow you to reconsider and then come back to us with your four.
All right. No, fair. You know what? Good points. So
you
want four of the top 10? Let's try this again. Eric Cole, Eric Staal, Cam Ward, and sweet Jesus, Ron Francis.
Derek.
Yes.
Can you
name three of the four I would have named?
Can you confirm Ron Francis is in the top 10?
I can confirm he's in the top three.
Can you confirm Cam Ward is in the top 10?
Yes.
Can you confirm Eric Staal is in the top 10?
Yes.
So it comes down to this, Matt Riegler, to maintain your legendary game show status, Derek, is Eric Cole one of the top 10 Carolina Hurricanes players of all time?
I am confirming that right now because I don't know if we had to bump him down. Let's take just a moment. Pulling up the old website. I can confirm that Eric Cole is in the top 10 Carolina Hurricanes of all time.
There we go. There we go. Game Show Friday legend Matt Riegler has unmasked, can confirm. This is a huge event.
Can I just ask if Paul Coffey is in there?
Paul Coffey is not in the top 10 for Carolina Hurricanes of all time, but he may be in the top 10 of horrible dating advice givers.
and that's a story we could tell you guys definitely
well off the air.
Well off the air. But guys, again, we thank you for all of the time. And at this point, I feel like we should cede the floor to Ken Confirm to unmask and share with us, the loyal Cheaters Never Win, and hopefully Merrick versus Wyszynski listeners, who has been the man behind the beauty of Twitter account that is at Ken Confirm.
My name is Bobby Gottfried. I live in Washington, D.C. Huge hockey fan. If you can't guess from where I live, I am a Caps fan. But I spent a number of years in North Carolina during law school and spent a lot of time watching the Hurricanes play.
Well, Ken, we appreciate you coming on. We'd like to try to call you Bobby, but you'll always be Ken to us. Ken, I will give you a bonus.
And I look forward to being Ken for many more trade deadlines at a minimum, and you know, time and other things allowing, I'd love to have the Ken Confirm account be more active than it has been in the past few years.
Could you do us a favor? Could you confirm how many cups the Washington Capitals currently have?
I can confirm that it is zero, and that they break my heart every year, and that I hope this year will be different. But until I see otherwise, I just can't get my hopes up anymore.
Well, guys, this has been an absolute blast. We cannot say thank you enough for taking 40-plus minutes out of your evening.
When we asked for 15 to 20, and here we go 40 minutes later. But, yeah, I'll go ahead and say it for Mike. Thank you for doing a lot of heavy lifting so we don't have to talk as much.
Exactly. And thank you guys for everything that you do for Hockey Twitter. We'll definitely have to have you guys back on. I feel like there needs to be a rubber match, something that maybe we prepare a little bit more for. We give you guys a little bit of chance to really kind of prepare, stretch your muscles out a little bit, and we'll see if we can perfect this whole Lucha thing so that way Wiffleball Matt has to do something embarrassing. So, guys, we appreciate it. Thanks for joining us here on the Cheaters Never Win, and we'll talk to you guys come playoff time. We could pump those guys' tires a little bit more, but why?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we did so for, what, the better part of 40 minutes?
We did. Thank them, though. Seriously, that was a lot of fun. We hope you guys enjoyed it. And now it's time to go to everybody's favorite segment of the night. I think one of the only segments we actually do. A little segment we like to call Cheat Mail. Cheat Mail, Cheat Mail, gotta go get some Cheat Mail.
For those with the benefit of flash photography, I've even added a little jig to that, too.
Yes.
They have no way of seeing that, but I wanted them to know that's how much I enjoy your jaunty tune, Mike.
Thank you.
Carrying on this enjoyment here, I will go to the very first Gmail question of the day. This comes from Matt Peterson at Matt Peterson PE. I'm assuming he's not a physical education teacher. Can you bring back the Facebook comments segment?
Never read the comments, Matt. Derek, next question for you. This one coming in from Nathaniel Wells. How many times can we keep doing nothing at the deadline?
I think we can do that all the times. Honestly, I think deadline deals are overrated unless you are in a position to go for the cup that year.
You can no longer get Mark Recchi at the deadline, so all deadline deals are now null and void.
Yeah, I think it's losing importance as we go on. This from Ethan Wilson at eWilson1861. Christ, he's old. One-for-one trade. Cam Ward for WWF's hockey-themed wrestler, The Goon. Do you do it?
Yes.
All right. Any additional insight on that? Or
no, just... that was my best. I don't know if you watched Trade Center today and Brian Burke on Trade Center with James Duffy.
Oh, I did. Sorry.
That question was deserving of a Brian Burke-like answer, which was Duffy basically giving him hell and Burkey just continuing to give him absolutely nothing. That's why we love Burkey here. Brian Burke, you're welcome on the podcast anytime, sir. This one coming in... from, I want to make sure I get this name right, Joe Ovius?
I think that's it.
Why does the media go out of its way to protect Cam Ward?
I think he must have pictures of local media doing inappropriate things at a petting zoo. That, or because a lot of local media are not first and foremost hockey fans, not saying I necessarily am sometimes come Ohio State football season, but... because I don't think they watch as much hockey around the league, they don't know what truly good goaltending is. And the fact that Cam is a decent interview and a nice guy, they want to protect the one link they have to the Stanley Cup.
I think the reason local media protects Cam Ward is because local media has a job to do, and that is to interest people in listening to their show. And I believe guys like Stephen A. Smith and Colin Cowherd have made a living out of doing hot take radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the simplest way to get accused of being a hot takeist here in Raleigh from a hockey perspective is to defend Cam Ward. I think you can also be like Joe Ovius is and just be an NC State grad who is an out-and-out Carolina fan who will do anything he can to protect that baby blue. You know, that's kind of how it's done.
There's your hot take.
There's your hot take. Hey, Joe, thanks for the question.
This one from John Murphy at jmurph0936. Again, I'm hoping these are both not birth years. We are currently looking at a number 4 pick in the draft. This is my input, assuming things fall the way they should. If we try, we may get the number 3. Chances of using it as trade bait at the draft?
Good question. This is not a generational draft as the last couple have been. When you think about Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, those type of players, this year you're going to have very good players who may take a couple of years before they even make an impact. So for teams that are in full-on rebuild mode, I think there may be an opportunity to sell that pick for some value. A team like Colorado, for example, who's going to be able to pick at the top of the draft, you know, do they maybe have interest in trading out, I don't know, Nathan McKinnon?
No, I can tell you right now, no.
Damn you, Derek. Derek, last question from this week's episode of Cheat Mail. This is from our good friend at Peak of Good Living.
Oh, still one of my favorite Twitter handles.
Yes. Is Justin Williams to Washington the greatest heel turn in NHL history?
Oh, man. Oh, that's good.
It is a good question.
No, I don't think it is, because he didn't go directly from one to the other. In recent years of cup contending teams, I'd have to go with when Hossa went from Pittsburgh to Detroit. I think that one was a little better. But I don't think that's the greatest heel turn in NHL history. Mike, do you have anything that's a little better than that?
I mean, in terms of heel turn, you're talking about going someplace from beloved to hated.
But everyone still loves Justin Williams here.
Right, yeah. Justin Williams is still loved. I'm thinking of greatest heel turns in history, and I think Mark Messier to Vancouver might be one of the great heel turns. I think, now, again, we've talked a lot on this episode about our Lord and Savior, Hockey Jesus himself, Joe Sakic. I think Joe Sakic actually signing an offer sheet with the New York Rangers, had it not been matched by the Colorado Avalanche, would have absolutely been the greatest heel turn in history.
It's crazy that you know Joe Sakic's career arc.
I do. He's so awesome. I love him. You know what else you know, Derek?
What's that?
You know beer.
I do know beer, and I also know beers that you hate.
And this one, folks, before Derek gets into being like, oh, this is so great and it tastes like this, don't let him lie to you. It tastes like balsamic vinegar that somebody mixed Robitussin with. So, Derek, please, tell the people about this fine, fine beverage.
So, Mike says that in one of these days, I'm going to bring over a bottle of Duchess de Bourgogne. And Mike is really going to find out what a beer that tastes like balsamic vinegar in the best way possible is. Believe me, it's real. Tonight's beer, I said screw it. I'm going with the beer that I know and I love. And I'm sorry to not review a beer that is brand new to me for you, our loyal listeners. But I went back to one of my favorite breweries in all of the world, Wicked Weed Brewing out of Asheville, North Carolina. This is Black Angel. This is one of these sours that really turned me on to the world of sour beers. It is a black sour ale aged on tart cherries in bourbon barrels. There are a lot of layers to this, and I'll go into the description a little more. It's aged in bourbon barrels over 1.5 pounds per barrel of tart Michigan cherries, rests in the barrels for approximately 8 to 10 months, and then is artfully blended to achieve complexity. Comes in a 500ml bottle, so it's, you know, a little over a pint. It's a shade under 8% alcohol.
The beer runs about $14 for the bottle, so it's not the cheapest brew you're going to buy, but, you know, when you want to treat yourself to something like this. The color on it, I held it up to Mike, and I was like, hey, Mike, this passes the Flanagan light test. And he's like, yeah, yeah, it passes the light test.
And it looked delicious before you described it.
And then on the nose, oh, this is where I begin to truly fall in love with the beer, and Mike almost vomits in his mouth a little bit. But it has the, it's just, it's sour, it's tart, like good tart cherries, but it finishes with a little bit of that bourbon barrel aging. So you're getting some, a little rich sweetness to contrast the tart, a little bit of oak, a little bit of vanilla. And all of those things are just amplified on the palate. One of the things that Wicked Weed, I think, does really, really well is layer flavors in a beer. So some beers, like even some of the IPAs that I love, they are a little bit one note. This one, the smaller sips you take, the longer you let this develop, not only in the glass, but as you take each sip, you will be rewarded with more and more flavors. So it starts out with just like, oh, there's sour, and then it's like, okay, no, there's the red fruit, the tart cherries, and some of that strawberry taste a little bit. And then the oak and the vanilla and the bourbon taste just kind of rounds it all out, and it works on this like really harmonious finish, and it's just effing delicious. And if you don't like sours, I would encourage you, if you're at a place that pours samples, because I'm not going to say go buy a $15 bottle if you don't like sours, but if you're at a place that does flights or offers samples on tap, try something like this, because it's a very different flavor. And please don't judge it on the first sip, because the first sip of something new is almost always weird. Let that sit, have a second sip, and then evaluate. If you don't like it, that's fine. But I think a lot of people who may not like sours just based on the name of drinking a sour beverage may really appreciate the flavors that are in these, because I know I have come and done a complete 180 in the past 4 years on these. Mike, on the other hand, I offered him a whiff of the beer. He's like, oh God, that smells awful. And then for some reason took a sip, cringed, and immediately poured himself a glass of some of Scotland's finest brown water.
Yes, this is a 16-year Ben Reich. And
a little something in the...
I know, exactly. This, it's scotch. It's brown. It's delicious. And it's not all frou-frou, cherry-soured... It's scotch.
There's flavors in the scotch that you could describe if you cared to.
Yeah, you know what it tastes like? Scotch.
But there's different good types scotch. Of scotch. There's peated scotch. There's lighter scotch. There's fruity scotch. There's honeyed scotch. There's aged toffee scotch. There's a whole wealth of flavors. You can't just say scotch. You and I know that.
Scotch, 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 scotch.
Can I bring you some Ardbeg? You want a Bowmore?
The arsonist was denied a bank loan. that's it. We're done. If we keep talking, local media man over here is going to talk about how great Cam Ward played last night and how
let's get the hell out.
Yeah. Oh. He leaned forward in his chair. Last chance, local media guy. All right, he's done, and we're done too. Guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Cheaters Never Win podcast. We greatly appreciate it, as always. Looking forward to joining you, all of our loyal friends, over in the PNC Arena on Friday night as the Arizona Coyotes come to town. I believe Mike Smith and Radim Verbata and Shane Doan are all still
angry
with the team.
Angry old man Shane Doan.
Oliver Ekman-Larsson, someone God, for the love of God, someone please save Oliver Ekman-Larsson so that way he is not destined to a career of complete horribleness. Maybe the Colorado Avalanche will save him like they saved Ray Bourque and actually make him be able to win a cup, because God knows Ray Bourque could not have won a cup on his own. He needed the glory that is our Lord and Savior, Joe Sakic. So if you'd like to talk more about Joe Sakic, please come to Section 328, climb the stairs, find me on Row C. Derek will be there as well. Anything else for the beautiful people, Derek?
No, thank you to everyone who has enjoyed our new Welp drink shirt. I think it's been very well received, so thank you to those folks. I'm sorry that this team causes all of us to Welp drink so much, but at least we'll have something to wear and commiserate in together.
I believe I'm thinking about getting a Welp drink clock to put here in the Section 328 Worldwide headquarters, so we always know when it is time to a Welp drink.
It's a good idea. I like that.
I like that as well. So come on up to the Section 328. Come say hi. We do appreciate it when you guys come up and let us know that you do enjoy the podcast. We also enjoy it when you guys come up and tell us that you hate the podcast and we're awful, horrible people, because that tries to make us a little bit better.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was saying,
Derek pointed at me like everybody who was listening to the podcast could see it, and they've been listening for an hour and 7 minutes. So, Derek, please interrupt me again.
I was just going to say, we even had someone deliver physical cheat mail to us on Friday.
Yeah, if you haven't, if you're not subscribed to our Facebook account, Section 320, or facebook.com/section328, make sure you do that. We've been trying to up our Facebook Live game over there. We did have some cheat mail delivered during the Ottawa game, and it was epic. So it was a lot of fun. We're kind of a little bit more active over on Instagram now.
We're trying.
We're trying. We're not pretty, but we're trying. We're really active over at Patreon, so check us out at Patreon.com/section328 and give us the extra change out of your couch cushions, because that helps this podcast continue to go while we don't have a sponsor.
And we can buy more cough drops that way too.
Exactly. We're done. My name's Mike.
This is Derek.
That guy over there is local media, and we're out of here. Yeah!